This podcast is brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Keep Joy on air by becoming a member, a subscriber, or donate. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.
Here's another Saturday Magazine podcast brought to you by Joy sponsor, Virgin Australia. Visit virginaustralia.com.
Across Melbourne on Joy 94.9 and streaming online at joy.org.au, you're listening to Saturday Magazine, every Saturday, 10 till 12.
You are on Saturday Magazine, Joy 94.9. Now, I need to remind people, Joy Donation Drive is just around the corner. It starts on Wednesday. It's another chance to help you keep LGBTIQ plus voices on air and go in the running to win some fabulous prizes. So it's from the 12th to 20th of June. Every time you donate $10, you'll go in the running. There's no maximum number of entries, so you can donate as much as you can. And it is tax deductible. And remember, we will use that money much better than any government ever will. And that's in the lead up to the Hour of Power on the 20th of June. Starts Wednesday, the 12th of June. Remember, we are on air. We don't run on air. And this is radio made by us. For us. Tess.
We're moving right along. We've got Misha Ketchell in the studio. Misha's the editor and the executive director, I believe, of The Conversation.
Yes.
Good morning to you, Misha.
Good morning.
Good to have you back in the studio.
Thank you.
So what we've been talking about so far this morning with Adele Ferguson is really about these raids and trying to unpack what all that means. I'm interested in your perspective. What do these raids mean for freedom of speech?
Well, I think they mean that the task of journalists trying to do journalism is going to be made significantly more difficult in terms of the culture they create. Michelle Grattan wrote a really strong piece this week basically saying that, you know, the government to some extent is trying to say that it's hands off, that these raids were decided by the AFP. But the reality is that they have presided over and created this culture of prosecution of these matters. And this sort of culture of secrecy, a culture of secrecy that's so strong that this week, I don't know if anybody saw, but the New York Times wrote an article with a headline, "Is Australia the World's Most Secretive Democracy?"
Yes, I saw that.
Yeah. Mm.
And this is, you know, can you describe to people, Misha, what press freedom means to you as a journalist, but what it means to the community that read and digest, you know, what you guys produce and other media outlets. What does it mean to you as a journalist, and why is that important to the public?
Let me go back a step, first of all.
Sure.
We actually don't have press freedom in Australia. We all tend to think we do because we all tend to live in a world of American sitcoms and law and order and First Amendment, and that sort of dictates so much of what we think exists. But in Australia, there is no real protection of press freedom. The closest we've got is a series of decisions by the High Court, which said there's sort of an implied freedom of political communication from our constitution, but that is very, very weak, and it can be overridden by any law passed by the government that is proportionate to achieving a particular goal. So I think the first thing to say is there is no positive assertion of press freedom in any of our institutional frameworks, and I think we're seeing the consequences of that now. What would it mean if we did have it? To me, it would mean a recognition of the proper role of journalism, which is bringing information to light in the interest of the public. And that is, by definition, going to conflict with the interests of the government of the day, with the interests of officials, sometimes with the interests of people that are involved in national security or, you know, surveillance agencies or other arms of government. The whole point of journalism is to say, our role is for information to have a trajectory, and that's from those who have it to those in the democracy who don't have it, and to share that information as widely as possible. And in the absence of a culture that respects that role for the press and respects that role in particular when it's discharged by whistleblowers, who are the people who really take the greatest risks, what you have is a chilling effect. So the stories that should be getting out won't be getting out. People won't be coming forward. And the functioning of the media is considerably hampered. So I think that's really what's at stake here.
And, you know, let me draw, you know, give an example. During the Rudd-Gillard-Rudd government, there was one of the programs they ran, you know, it was Pink Bats. And a lot of the unpleasant things about that and some of the deadly things about that program and the appalling lack of oversight came to light initially from whistleblowers.
That's right, yeah.
Now, as it should, and the media reported that, the opposition at the time, you know, were like roosters that had got their own hen house. They couldn't believe their luck. This was something they could beat the government up about endlessly. That's just one example, right? That's what whistleblowers actually help happen in a free media. We're talking specifically here about, within the public service, the protection for whistleblowers. A lot of people think, oh, they're protected. Well, actually, they're not. You know, they can make a public interest disclosure, and as in the case of the most recent, the tax office say, oh, well, basically, there's nothing to see here. We don't agree. There isn't the protection, and this is being whittled down all the time. It should actually be increased. So what do you see, Misha, as a journalist? This is going to make it much harder for you and for the journalists on The Conversation to write about these public interest issues if whistleblowers are too afraid to come forward.
I think so. I mean, yes, that's the case. And I think what we need to do is take really the crisis of this week and try to turn it into something positive. And one thing that has been out there is there have been some ideas about trying to create a positive assertion of the value of the media and of press freedom. Peter Grest, the very well-known Australian journalist who's now at University of Queensland, has been working with a group called the Alliance for Press Freedom.
Yes.
And they've come up with a proposal to create a piece of legislation that's a positive assertion of journalists' rights and also the rights of whistleblowers and sort of the rights of freedom of information and freedom of speech. And the idea is that whenever legislation's passed, and we've had something like 75 pieces of law since September 11, 2001, that have actually impinged upon or been about secrecy or security. Whenever a law is passed, you're always balancing two things. So if you're passing a law, for example, that has a national security aspect to it, whenever somebody says, hold it a second, what does that mean for press freedom? Everyone's like, well, do you want to be protected from terrorists or don't you?
Oh, yeah.
And it's very, very hard to actually get the press freedom aspect to be given proper weight. In addition, we've had a problem where both Labor and the Coalition have been in lockstep on this for a long time, because in particular, you know, Labor doesn't want to be wedged by being seen to be soft on national security. So we've had all these laws passed with basically no real strong political oversight. So we've got this sort of very bad legal regime. We've seen that it's ineffective to try to get protection of press freedom in individual laws. There have been some amendments won, but not very many. So the idea that Peter Grest has come up with is, if we created a law that said these are the press values about free speech, about access to information in a democracy, about protection of whistleblowers, put that there as a separate law, and basically that law could say any other law that's passed will be read down in accordance with this piece of legislation. So if there's any ambiguity, this will create a context where we say we value freedom of the press.
And don't forget, Peter Grester was on the receiving end of Egyptian press freedom.
Yes.
He was in a cage, in a jail, in a court.
I think for more than 400 days.
For more than a year, right? That's what press freedom means in Egypt. That's what press freedom means in China. That's what it means in so many other places around the world. This is the track that we are on in Australia. Now, people go, oh, you're overreacting, Macca. No, this is where the legislators, and particularly some of the bureaucrats, would like to end up.
Macca, I asked this question of Adele, and I'm going to ask Misha as well. Do you genuinely believe that people on the street, ordinary people on the street, understand what's going on and what this really means?
No, I don't. I think most people think that we have positive protections of press freedom. Most people would have a sense of sort of the general culture that we get from the US and to some extent from the UK or other countries, and would feel that the media is not under direct threat. I think also there is to some extent, when people do turn their mind to it, a level of cynicism about journalists. I mean, journalists aren't necessarily super highly regarded either. They don't necessarily have a massive amount of trust. So I don't think people know and understand these issues. I think that what's happened this week has been very good in terms of bringing them to light. But what we have to hope now is that the political process can actually sort of work through designing a system that is better at dealing with these issues. I just wanted to add the other proposal that is out there for dealing with this is the idea about some sort of Bill of Rights, the fact that in Australia we have a lack of a positive assertion of rights more generally. And there are some people who are also advocating for something wider. So there's two ways. There's like a potential media protection law, press freedom law, or a Bill of Rights, but we need something.
Saturday Magazine, Joy 94.9. Tass.
We've had a huge amount of feedback. 317's back on the airwaves. Great to see you. Look, you know, Jenny Smith, Greg Axton, lots of people have been coming in with lots of feedback about the issues that we've been talking about. But, Misha, back to you. The Bill of Rights, tell us what that means.
Well, it's just an idea that I mean, the reason that we don't have protection for free press in Australia is that there is no sort of constitutional set of ideas around rights that individual citizens have. And the idea of a Bill of Rights is trying to sort of enshrine those positive protections. And it wouldn't necessarily just be limited to press freedom. So you would talk about other things like freedom of religion.
So it's more like a human rights charter.
Yeah, something like that.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
But I mean, the idea of that is that then you actually have the protection that we all think we have, but we don't.
Because when you restrict the ability, by virtue of this legislation and by the raids carried out by the AFP or the Australian Tax Office deciding that a whistleblower, you know, needs to be prosecuted, you are actually restricting freedom of the press, but, you know, you're also restricting your right or your wish to know what's happening in our government. This is about government not wanting you to know what they are doing.
That's right. Well, it's about controlling the flow of information.
Yeah.
It was very interesting. There was a story in the Sydney Morning Herald, I think it came out yesterday or maybe even today, saying that there was another matter that was referred to the AFP, which was about a leak of information around the Medivac bill.
Yes.
And basically that investigation was dropped. Now, that leak was very much to the government of the day's benefit. And there's a question sort of about who the source of that leak might be. That one gets dropped. Some of the others get pursued. And irrespective of what the process is in terms of the classification of the information, it just seems that there is a way in which the political culture, which often relies upon leaks, in many ways in a good way, because that's how we end up being informed, it happens all the time in politics, in Parliament House. And then suddenly one of those leaks, it's like the floor falls out and
yes.
It's this massive thing and people are being investigated. And that seems to be just about a culture of generalised fear.
I wonder what some of the libertarian folk in the federal parliament who stand up and sometimes irrationally, I think, defend freedom of speech. I wonder what they think, Tass.
Like who, Mecca?
Oh, I don't know. Tim Wilson. You know, what does Tim think? What does, some of his other Liberal colleagues, what do they think about this? And, of course, you know, when these disclosures damage the government of the day, I understand they find it really uncomfortable. And, you know, they get out there with their talking points. But when a disclosure damages the opposition, they have a different view. There's more than one way to spell hypocrisy, but it's actually about a failure of leadership.
Yeah.
But it is about hypocrisy, and it's what suits them at the time. But what we're seeing, you know, is ultimately the bureaucrats and the judicial and the let's call them the police. They'd love to be in a position where they could have a journalist in a cage in a court.
Misha,
don't think it's that long a road. It's not.
Speaking of bureaucrats and so forth, Ida Buttrose made a comment yesterday about the raids and about freedom of press. What's your take on that?
I think it's a very positive sign. I think she came out quite strongly. And I think we'll have to wait and see what else she's able to do and is able to achieve. But she did have a conversation with the communications minister and was advocating on behalf of the ABC, which, you know, I think is a good thing. The bigger sort of question here about sort of legislation around, you know, national security, I think we do need to acknowledge that there are times when the functioning of government does rely upon having processes that keep certain types of information confidential. But what we need to do is understand which types of information are national interest that require that and which types of information are part of the political process, and also what the appropriate consequences are and who those consequences should be for. So, you know, if somebody leaks information that they shouldn't leak, obviously that might be an employment matter. There might be consequences for that. That might be quite reasonable if that's entirely inappropriate. I think what we've got here is a real confusion of proportion and scale and appropriateness around matters that were, you know, clearly huge public interest matters where there really was no national security implication as far as I can see. So.
You see, national security in China, you can't even talk about Tiananmen Square.
Yeah.
30 years on, right? Now, we've got a message from a listener there, Tass. It's a bit long one, but you might
read it out, Macca, read it out.
Australia is no longer the lucky country. An elected government within a democracy have no lawful right to breach the basic rights enshrined and contained within a democracy. Well, that's why we need a Bill of Rights. LGBTI elders historically understood the challenges of fighting for basic human rights and freedoms. It's a dangerous time we live in, a time that is being abused with a pretense for supporting protections around terrorism. It sounds and has similarities with what happened in Europe in World War II. It's also concerning the introduction of religious freedoms discussion. We believe that people trust in the basic values of Australia and become oblivious to news and instead are refocused on what is creating a platform for a right-wing government to implement these laws. It's comparable to China and its cameras spying on the general population. It's not just right-wing governments.
It's all governments, actually.
You know, left-wing governments, you know, Labor governments, the Labor Party, you know, the Labor Party, the Liberals and the Nats, they're having a big threesome on this. They're all in the same bed.
Do you agree with that, Misha?
To some extent, yes. I think it's as I was saying before, particularly Labor and the Coalition have been in lockstep on these issues. There is a political reality behind that, and I think we need to sort of a circuit breaker on that because it is a there aren't a strong enough voices in the public sphere defending this idea of press freedom. And it's interesting. I mean, there are groups that are supposed to be advocates, strong advocates for freedom, like the IPA, for example, you know, who will argue for things like, you know, changes to 18C and, you know, individual rights all the time. But when it comes to something like this, suddenly they're all very quiet. It's just, you know, and I think that's very disappointing. If you do believe in freedom of individuals and empowering individuals in relation to the government, this is the point at which you should be most
activated. You either believe in it or you don't.
That's right.
Yeah. So, you know, discussion's been great. We've had a huge amount of listener feedback this morning, huge amounts. That, to me, suggests that people actually understand what's going on and what this means. What can we do? What should we do? What action can we as individuals take? We can talk about this, obviously, but what else is practical can we do?
I think there are a few things, one of which is advocate for, you know, some sort of Bill of Rights or some sort of legislation. There's a really good proposal put out by the Alliance for Journalists' Freedom, which I would recommend people look up and have a look at and see if it's something they would want to support. The other thing is, you know, equally Bill of Rights. George Williams, the constitutional scholar, was calling for that this week as well. So that's another thing to advocate for. And, you know, as long as people continue to make sure their voices are heard, writing letters, phoning in, messaging programs like this, hopefully this conversation will continue and those people who are actually in a position to create some change to the legal regime will consider doing so. I mean, it will be a long process, and it, you know, obviously is a political process, but I think if there is a popular groundswell for this, then there's some prospect of success.
Do you feel optimistic?
I feel tentatively optimistic. I think you've got to understand that these things are very, very long processes. They're very complicated. There's always a lot of resistance and there's a lot of ways that you can fall at different hurdles. But I do think that we've reached a moment where people have sort of twigged that something is going on that's concerning.
Michael, what do you think?
Well, I think it's, you know, government, you know, takes the advice ultimately of officials. And, you know, legislation comes as a result of submissions, not just from the public, but overwhelmingly from those organisations like the Federal Police, like ASIO, like the Office of National Assessments, state police forces and all that. Now, this is about, it is about restricting freedoms. They know that, we know that, the public need to know that. But when government talks about national security, to me it has exactly, you know, think back to the Hanif case. When they talk about national security, to me it's about as believable when government talks about, oh no, we can't do that because that's less money for schools, nurses and police. Oh, okay, that's all that government spends its money on, is it? Right? National security is this all-encompassing issue and matter that basically what it means is, yes, it's to protect us from terrorism. No one argues about that, right? But raiding journalists, raiding a whistleblower from the tax office, how's that about national security?
Yeah.
And also, you know, it's bullshit.
Also, it's the manner in which it happened. I mean, 7 hours at somebody's house, you know, going through their underwear drawer.
Yeah.
I mean, appalling. It's you know, that is, there's something quite theatrical about that that's concerning. And particularly because certainly in the McBride case, you know, we had somebody who had claimed to be the source of the information already.
I mean,
that raid, you know, in that context is extraordinary. So, I mean, you know, it's... The good thing that's come out of this is I think it's really definitely put it on everyone's radar, and hopefully there will be some continuing momentum.
Well, based on the feedback we've had this morning, I think that might be the case. Misha, thank you very much for your time this morning.
Great,
we are out of time, so we'll have to move on.
And what people can do, apart from thinking about it and talking about it and, you know, speaking to politicians and everything about it, is support independent journalism, right? If you don't support it, it won't exist, and it certainly won't exist if press freedoms are further encroached. So you need to support independent journalism.
That's exactly right. That's the key. Support the conversation, support Joy Radio.
That's right.
Saturday Magazine on Joy 94.9, proudly sponsored by Virgin Australia. Visit virginaustralia.com.
Thanks for listening to another Joy podcast brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Help us keep Joy on air. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.